I mentioned how Harvest Plus, they have communication networks to facilitate across disciplines. My talk is following deans, and what we're able to do is to take advantage of this basic, more basic work in Arabidopsis and work with things in Maize, and that's another form of communication. Harvest Plus has meetings where they bring people together, where they encourage you to go visit another lab and support you to do that. And so that's a nice aspect about it. And the work that I'm presenting, I've got into carotenoids in corn about 10 years ago. And at the time, one gene was cloned, Y1, which is the difference between white and yellow corn, phytoene synthase. One gene had been cloned at that time. And I wrote my first proposal, and I said, well, someday we'll clone the genes in this well-characterized biosynthetic pathway, and we'll be able to do allele-specific selection. But in some ways, it was so far out, I never really thought it would happen. I mean, I did, but it was 10 years away. Well, it's happening now. So it's very rewarding and fulfilling to me that we're actually doing these things, and you say something 10 years ago, and a proposal comes true. But to follow up on Dean's work, probably don't have the white cap as well. But something like this here is going to be higher in total carotenoids. This here is a Florida asynthetic, which is a cross between temperate and tropical germplasm, but it has that white cap. Now, if you look over here, you see these slight little white caps there. That may have a white cap allele, but it's in a flinty background, so it's harder to see. So if we do nothing else, and I'll present some of the evidence, we do nothing else but get rid of that white cap gene in maize populations, we're going to increase total carotenoids. And apparently it's more prevalent than we thought, because if you put it in some backgrounds that are pretty flinty, it may be there, but you don't see it. You know, here it's pretty apparent. But we have molecular probes to determine whether it's present or not. So that's a nice follow from Dean's work. And then I need to make sure I stay on time and check my time. I've got white corn, which a lot of East Africa eats white corn. They have problems with yellow corn because it represents, it could represent GMOs, it could represent corn for animals, it could represent transgenics, but there's a lot of negative associations. So we want to come in with orange corn. But now there's an acceptance factor. You know, people have to be willing to pick what they have. And I have this up here. I got this slide actually from Ed Buckler, because you have acceptance issues, but the diversity, if these were random maize lines, the diversity between some maize lines is of about the same magnitude as the diversity between chimpanzees and humans. The point being is maize as a crop has a lot of allelic diversity, and we now have a well-characterized pathway, and we want to take advantage of it. This here points out, though, people have to eat the yellow or orange as opposed to the white. This is in an acceptance trial in a marketplace in Maputo, Mozambique. This happens to be my son. This is an ag economist, and this is a guy who had a Chicago t-shirt on, so that's how we got into the picture. But the people actually were willing to accept the orange maize. Some hated it, some loved it. But what I'm going to focus mostly now on is the genetics we're doing. And so, you know, why did I get into carotenoids? It was partly because it had a well-characterized pathway, and it was of equal interest. There's nutritional value, but also I felt it could evolve into a model QTL system, and it has. It was also an Illinois school color, and Bob Lambert and I were just having some fun selecting some orange corn that maybe some of the undergraduates could sell before football games. And I feel it could evolve into an applied marker-assisted selection system with genes. So maize, as I mentioned, there's a lot of variation, and there is a lot of variation for flux into the carotenoid pathway. There's light yellows and dark yellows, there's orange corns. Here you've got your white cap that's chewing things up. But we had a lot of variation to work with. And if you just look here, this is HPLC and spectrophotometric analysis of carotenoids. You see that there are different levels of carotenoids in maize. And I just want to point to this slide where you have this inbred from Minnesota, A619, crossed with an SC55 line. I'm going to come back to that. Notice it's got less than 20 micrograms per gram total carotenoids. Now, this same line, crossed with a line here that has some South African and tropical germplasm, has a much higher level. And we can make single crosses and greatly alter total carotenoids. So it's fairly heritable. And we have variation to work with in total and specific carotenoids. Now, it doesn't have to be high tech. You know, some of the orange corns we got to work with when we went into the diversity materials, they had been selected to be orange by American Indians. And there's material in Thailand that's orange, in Western China, and Uruguay and Paraguay, and it's actually related to germplasm. And you can select for darker orange. You can just lay them out on a table, 200 families, and pick the darker ones and recombine them. 14-year-olds can do it. I had a grad student in her second week could do it. And actually, this is her work. And this is a population that was created from a synthetic of inbreds from the Buckler-Goodman diversity lines. And we do that because they're basically determining haplotypes in many of the genes in that set, so we know what went in. And what we do is we pick the darker orange ones. See, white cap is segregating in this population. We're going to select against it. And we would take the darker ones and recombine them. It's very simple, and it works. And we're making progress for total carotenoids and beta-carotene a little bit. It's slightly positive for carotenoid. But to get the provitamin A, you can't just look at an ear of corn and say this one has got more provitamin A. You can't see it. You can see total carotenoids, and beta-carotene is just part of that. So basically, you got to do HPLC. And it's a lot more expensive. It's complex. You've got to maintain the instrumentation. And you need to know something about the pathway. So what Dean nicely set up is these are the compounds here. Beta-carotene and beta-cryptoxanthin that we want. Now you have basically right here, like when I started, one gene had been cloned for phytoene synthase, and that makes the difference between white and yellow corn. And you have a number of desaturation steps. You get to lycopene, and it branches this way or that way. And we want it to come down to here, but then we want it to stop. So it's not like we just want more. We want more here. We want turbocharged alleles. We want this one to work well, that one not to work so well. But then we want it to stop. So we have specific needs. You have to do HPLC because when you look at these compounds, this is a vitamin A molecule. Beta-carotene has two structures. Beta-cryptoxanthin, due to the hydroxylation over here on this ring, only has one. Very small differences, so you have to do HPLC to distinguish them. So it's expensive, and it's a pain, and the equipment goes off. There's a lot of controls you have to do. It doesn't have the throughput that a breeder wants to be able to make rapid progress on large populations. So we decided to take a genetic approach, and we started off mapping QTL years ago, and that has led to some candidate genes, which enables us to do association analysis. And if you get to the genes, it's going to facilitate marker-assisted selection because we can look for the best allele, not just an allele, the best allele, or one of the best, and then you know what you have. When you have QTL, you know it's better than another plant. You don't know if it's the best. And for the developing world, going to association analysis and allele-specific selection, I liken to going directly to wireless or to cell phones. You don't have to lay phone lines and do all that work, and you skip over QTL mapping and just go right for the alleles and go into their germplasm. So this summarizes years of work, and we mapped a number of QTL, and it got interesting when some of the QTL mapped to regions where there are known genes in the biosynthetic pathway. And this is Y1, And there's about five or six studies now that map a QTL for carotenoids to Y1. And then over here is zeta carotene desaturase, which is a couple steps down. Now over here, we had a QTL for years with no candidate. And this is where the genomics in other species comes in. But that's the epsilon cyclase. It maps to that spot. And when we reanalyzed our data, it made a lot of sense. And I'll come back to it. But this was a question mark 3 years ago. I'd have a question mark on my slide. So it became interesting. All these genes were the biosynthetic pathway, and they were explaining a lot of the variation. So we had something here, and we had something here, and then we got something here. Now, you have the cyclases, and if the beta cyclase works, you get beta carotene. You get two beta cyclization events. Over here, you have an epsilon cyclase and a beta cyclase. And what that means is you get alpha carotene, and you only have one beta carotene equivalent molecule. So the beta cyclase works twice over here and only once over there. We don't want this. We don't want alpha carotene. It's not as bioavailable, and it leads to lutein. Beta carotene, if you have it, it'll move into beta cryptoxanthin, which is bioavailable, and it has a provitamin A structure. So that's what we want to do. So we had these QTL, and they mapped to these genes. We went to association analysis, and this is when I started collaborating with Ed Buckler very closely. And we did it for these genes in different capacities. And association analysis, for those of you not familiar, we're basically treating maize as the population. We have 300 inbreds that Major Goodman helped identify that represent maize, and you're sequencing these genes across the diversity and measuring the trait and doing your analysis to relate polymorphism with the phenotypic variation. So it's like a super QTL population in a sense. And our best results, and is what I'm going to focus on in the next 5 minutes, is for the lycopene epsilon cyclase at that branch point that I mentioned. And it's in a very key location in the pathway in order to get higher beta carotene and cryptoxanthin. Phytoene synthase, we have, they're more on the preliminary nature with the Y1 SSR on 100 progeny. We have an association, and we're going to come back to that. If the coding region is not that polymorphic, and so SNPs weren't run on it. And the zeta carotene desaturase, we've got marginal significance in three environments for total carotenoids, and that kind of fits in where it is in the pathway. But eventually, we'll want to find the best allele here and the best allele there. But this had the real high p-value, and for beta carotene, it made more sense. So we had something marginal there, but we had a real big hit in the epsilon cyclase. And if the epsilon cyclase doesn't work too well, what you have is the beta cyclase has got more opportunity to have put beta rings on, which leads to beta carotene. So this is what we focused in on. This here is the work of Carlos Harges, who was a postdoc in Ed Buckler's lab. He now works for Monsanto. And it's one slide, but it represents a real lot of work. This is the maize lycopene epsilon cyclase gene. And where you have asterisks, that means this polymorphism was significantly associated with levels of beta carotene, and it's also associated with flux down one branch or the other. That's the strongest association, flux down the alpha side or the beta side. Now, the white triangles are little transposable elements that are sitting in the promoter region. And these here, in Tom Brutnell's lab, they've shown that the presence of these elements decrease transcription. And the transcript levels are associated with flux down the different branches. So if this gene is not transcribed as well, there's less of it, and you don't get as much going down the alpha branch, and more goes down the beta branch. Now, there's also an indel here that's highly associated. And what you have to bear in mind is 300 lines you look at, and there's different sets and combinations of polymorphism in there. But the strongest associations are here and here. And that's nice because we can have some fairly user-friendly, simple PCR assays with that. Okay. This just shows the association analysis results. And, you know, Ed was real excited about looking at the ratio of the branches. And that makes sense. Sum up everything on the alpha side, everything on the beta side, and look at the ratio, because that's where the gene fits in. And these are some of the highest reported p-values in association analysis in plants, to my knowledge. And that's great, but, you know, I was interested in beta-carotene. The p-values are not as high, but that makes sense because it could go to that side of the branch and then go to beta-cryptoxanthin or zeaxanthin from the same allelic effect. Still highly significant. But we ran another analysis because I was interested in both of these. And the p-value is higher than just beta-carotene, and that makes sense because whether it stops at beta-carotene or beta-cryptoxanthin, you're building up that pool. And it's those two versus zeaxanthin if it keeps going along. So we have a high association there, not as high as the branches because that includes zeaxanthin, but that's okay. So these were very highly significant and run with the TASL program, and Carlos did this work. So to summarize, there are a number of polymorphisms, and we have identified certain combinations of the polymorphism that are more favorable. But the indels and transposable elements appear to be the most promising polymorphisms that we're taking advantage of. And this here we've shown is a functional polymorphism on transcription, and it correlated nicely. So that's a summary of this gene. Okay, we got some supporting data from Mark Williams at Pioneer. They were doing EMS for another reason, and they found some ears of corn that were segregating from yellow to orange, or slightly different intensities of color. And what they found was, they long story short, it mapped right to where our QTL was. That was that unknown QTL I talked about 3 years, and we didn't know. The marker that was closest to this mutant that they mapped was the marker that was one of the flanking markers for our QTL. So it put it right, you know, smack dab, very close to that spot. So it maps there, and it's increasing beta-carotene, beta-cryptoxanthin, and zeaxanthin. So that was another independent piece of data for it. So when this came along, what we decided to do was to go back to our first study where we had that unknown QTL. And we had just measured individual compounds. When I got into carotenoids, I read a paper from the 60s and from the 80s, and there were 5 compounds they measured. When we learned about what the epsilon cyclase does, let's measure the ratio of the branches rather than just the individual compounds. And so when we measured the ratio of the branches, the p-value and the log score and the R square went up considerably. It was highly significant in the paper, but we didn't know what it does. And so that fit in with the biology of the lycopene epsilon cyclase because it was more significant for the branches than it was for any one individual compound, which is what that gene affects. So the data we have different sets of information, independent and supportive, where the QTL goes to bin 8.05, and this is now in 3 different populations, and the mutant that Pioneer found maps to the same spot as well, and it's altering flux down the branches. It's an EMS mutant. And the association analysis is extremely highly significant, and this is over 4 independent years of data. We initially had 100 progeny, and we don't even use that data anymore. It's up to 200 plus progeny each year. So combined, it gives pretty compelling data. And what it points to is, as I said in the beginning, there's a lot of natural allelic variation in maize that can be used. And in this case, this is secondary metabolism. It's pointing to natural allelic variation in genes that encode enzymes in the pathway, and I'll present some more evidence towards this in a moment. And these could be used to modify flux into and within the pathway. I haven't given all of that to you, but I will now. So we had these genes, but there were other QTL that weren't identified. You know, were these transcription factors, hydroxylases, cleavage enzymes? And I actually have an old slide that said that. I didn't just put this up. Right. So there's one genetic cross that we made, and if you could carefully pay attention, well, you are anyway, but I mean, it's a little harder to follow this. A619 was the line that when we were only looking at our local temperate germplasm, is clearly high for carotenoids. It's the line that's the Ohio 43 type, came out of Minnesota. And SC55 was interesting. This is when we went into the diversity materials. It was largely beta-carotene. See, there's beta-carotene. It was largely beta-carotene. So I crossed it as male onto A619 because at the time that was the line that had the highest level of total carotenoids that I was familiar with. And what you see is we almost doubled beta-carotene, but we had a reduction in total carotenoids. Now, you could explain the increase in beta-carotene by the reduction in zeaxanthin. See, we reduced zeaxanthin and you put it into beta-carotene. And so you wonder, is it a hydroxylase? But the other thing that bothered me a little bit about this is the reduction in zeaxanthin could explain the increase in beta-carotene. But lutein also went down. So we had lutein and it decreased. And so I wasn't, you know, the colors look funny to me over here, but just believe me, the lutein went down too. So I thought two things were going on in the cross. I'll just mention briefly, this doesn't work in all crosses, but let's just stick with the A619 by SC55. What you have here is actually the extremes of this population. The parent is a little more yellow than this, and the other parent, A619, is a little less orange. You have transgressive segregation in this. But this just comes from just making the cross, and these are F23 families of A619 by SC55. So we had, you can see the color differences here. I mean, that is clearly different than that. You don't need to do HPLC. And not all of them, you know, bred true. I'm showing you a family that was true breeding for this color, and this is true breeding for that color. And if you go here, some of them would segregate for different colors. So we had the genotypic data, we didn't have HPLC, and I had Robin go and just rank the ears, just rank them from darkest to lightest. And we were able to detect a major QTL that went to the bottom of chromosome 9. It was highly significant, and that's just by visual scoring. What we found out, and Dean helped to point this out to me, that white cap maps to that region on chromosome 9. I found it embarrassing that a Rhabdopsis guy told me that. I told him about these results and I went to the winter nursery and he's like, hey, guess what's down there? So white cap is what I showed you earlier. It's a degradation enzyme, and when you have soft starch you can see it better. It's homologous to Arabidopsis CCD1, which is the carotenoid cleavage enzyme you mentioned. And when we get the HPLC data done, it strongly supports this QTL there. It kind of affects everything. And then to wrap up here quickly, CCD1 is a cleavage enzyme, and it's bringing another whole dimension of the strategy. We can select with less degradation. We've been concentrating on biosynthesis, getting it in and stopping it. This may be in some ways more productive or as productive. I'm going to have to go around the world and get rid of white cap alleles, because what I didn't mention is in SC55, I worked with it, we just molecularly characterized and it looks like it has the white cap mutant, but it's not in a soft starch background. And so we're going to actually have to determine with molecular markers what allele is present, but we know that's the one we don't want. I'm not going to get into the degradation enzymes and their specificity, but it does appear that they're chewing up the xanthophylls more than they are the carotenes in an initial take. And so this here is like a white cap allele that you can see easily. We'd like to have something like this as opposed to something like that. We can go around and do that, and as Dean mentioned, we're doing tilling. B73 has one copy. That's the allele we want, and we want to knock it down a little bit more. Okay, and to summarize the rest of the work, I talked about here, but we do have other leads at various stages in the pathway for a hydroxylase. The white cap is here. We have DXS here, and the beta cyclase Okay, the lycopene beta cyclase, we have a QTL as well. So there's a number of genes in the pathway and also that affect degradation, and we're developing breeder-friendly PCR-based markers for them. So we've got plenty to work with, and we want to pyramid the different alleles. Okay, so the funding for this came from USAID. It came from BARD. And it started off one grad student. I had one grad student on it, and then with some fellowship funds, I was able to no-cost extend, and you're starting from scratch. And then I got the USAID asked me to get involved, and now I'm involved with Harvest Plus. But the point is you can start a whole new initiative with one student. And it was Jeff Wong, and he was a good student. That helped. I work with Ed, and he's kind of using carotenoids as an example of looking at diversity for their project, and there's huge resources there. And we used it for screening for germplasm as well as association analysis. So that's where the funding came from. And acknowledgments, these are some of the people, Jeff Wong did some of the early work and some grad students. And Peter Byers' lab was very helpful because you go and he talks to you about carotenoids in ways that you had never thought about before. And these are people, the lycopene epsilon cyclase story, these are the people that are also involved in that work with that. And I think, I will stop there. And if there's any questions, I'll take a question.